I wonder if you've come to any personal conclusions over the years about survival of consciousness, an increasingly important question for you and I, beyond death. Do you believe that it does survive?
Well, you sure kicked this conversation up a couple notches, didn't you?
Yes,
like
I did.
Emerald says. Bam, you just knocked it up. Yeah, this is the holy grail, isn't it? Of topics. This really is. And I am a person that has difficulty at accepting things on faith alone. This is the
Me
way
too.
I am.
Yeah.
And so I'm one that needs quite a few rocks on the pile for convincing. And I'm also, I need more than just one pile of rocks. I have to have different ways that I come about validating a hypothesis or some notion or some piece of information that I get. And so I always come at it multiple different ways, different directions. So for me, on this particular topic, which is so profound, so huge, and has so much diverse meaning behind it, I came at it multiple directions. Now, in this area, let's talk about consciousness for a minute, because we're talking about, does consciousness survive bodily death?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to say, well, exactly, what do we know about consciousness? What is it that we think we really know? And of course, none of our science, our traditional science, can whether it's quantum mechanics or not, can begin to handle the subject of consciousness. And there are so many different in this whole theater. There are many, many different compartments to this whole area. For example, you know, we can talk about consciousness as it affects things in micro macro PK or psychometry, mental telepathy, remote viewing, the power of prayer. You know, and we have all kinds of famous authors that have written about apparitions and poltergeists So we have even the remote viewing that was famously engaged by the CIA for 20 years, and friends of ours ran those programs for SRI, and so we have in Bob John and Brenda Dunn's work at PAIR on random remote generators.
You bet.
And so we understand all that. We know those people, and so we know that. If we look at any one of these kinds of areas and say, is there any substance to any of this stuff? I mean, can we find one white crow? If you find one lousy white crow here, you got a problem from a normal science context. In that context, you have a problem. And so what I did is I tried to find as many, our first one white crow, and was there a second one or a third? And how did I really know it was a white crow? And so you'd go down that road and until finally you say, yeah, there's legitimacy here because there are too many validations of this. So then you get into, oh gosh, other subjects like past lives that Brian Weiss engages mm-hmm. in, and that opens up all kinds, because then you find out guys like Harold Sherman wrote about this a long time ago, and then you find out like people like William James wrote about it even way before that, and William James was no slouch. He was a world-class scientist and researcher in his time, mm-hmm. Even James Pike. So you had these kinds of folks, and so for me, I went back like I did in the UFO topic. In fact, our science advisory board, you may not know this, when we initially formed NIDS, it had two pillars of interest, UFOs and consciousness.
Yes.
And we had a population of members on that board that fit in both camps. And so we were blessed to have, Ian Stevenson was a member, and we had William Morris, I think. Melvin Morris was. Emily Cook, who was also an associate of Ian Stevenson's, and other people, very high caliber, world-class researchers.
Top people, I know.
Yeah, very top. And you know, we talked with people like Larry Dossey, familiar with all of his work in the power of prayer, and how do you validate that that is, you know, you, do you have double-blind studies where you have a placebo situation and you're able to validate that the control group is securely in place, and yet, you know, you're having this this effect, and is there a difference between whether the patient is assisted by the physician, or how many does it, is there a factor of how many people are praying? Does that make a difference, or the conviction of the people that are praying, including the physician? Is there a component here that's connected to the belief? How strong is the belief in facilitating this? And then you get into the apparitional side of it, and poltergeist activity. And so I think, long story short, I do believe in a God force. I think I come at that from a cosmological prospect, as well as a belief in that the accumulation of all these other things suggests that to me very, very, very strongly. And I do think there is a survival of consciousness, because there are just far too many fields that tell us consciousness can operate independent of time. It can operate independent of location. I mean, look at Edgar Cayce. I mean, you don't have to, you know, a person doesn't have to take any one of these things and say, well, gee, I don't really kind of believe all that that really happened, that Edgar Cayce could do those things and so forth. Well, then move into one of the other topics and research the hell out of that, and see if you go from topic to topic to topic until you come up with a white crow, and now you've got a problem. If you're a skeptic, you have a problem here.
Sure.
You know, and it's now try to explain that. And so eventually you come to these topics and you find out that, oh, my gosh, consciousness behaves independent of the any of the explanations of normal science and physics, and independent of your container, in a sense that in several different ways it exhibits independence of the container that is spawning that consciousness.
Hear, hear. Did you find, or do you believe there to be any connection, Robert, between consciousness and the appearance of UFOs?
Oh, gosh, yes.